The Wraiths are going to kill you if you drag the court and the council into direct opposition, I said.
The Wraiths will never know. I own 20 ghouls, Dresden, and they're always hungry. What they leave of your corpse won't fill a moist sponge.
Connie suddenly ceased moving altogether. Her skin had become pure ivory white. She shuddered, her breaths coming in ragged gasps. She tilted her head back, and a low, throaty moan came out of her throat. I've had sex that wasn't as good as Connie sounded. Damn it, Dresden, focus. I was out of time.
The council will find out, Chuck. They're wizards. Finding unfindable information is what they do.
He smirked.
I think we both know that their reputation is very well constructed.
We did both know that.
Damn it.
You think nobody's going to miss me? I asked. I have friends, you know.
Farewell suddenly leaned forward, focusing on Connie, his eyes becoming a few shades lighter.
Perhaps, Dresden, but your friends are not here.
Then there was a crash so loud that it shook the building. Barrowill's sleek black Lincoln Town car came crashing through the dorm room's door, taking a sizable portion of the wall with it. The ghouls holding me down were scattered by the debris, and fine dust filled the air. I started coughing at once, but I could see what had happened. The car had come through from the far side of this wing of the dorm, smashing through the room where Barrowill had waited in ambush. The car had crossed the hall and wound up with its bumper and front tires resting inside Irwin's room. It had smashed a massive hole in the outer brick wall of the building, leaving it gaping open to the night. That got everyone's attention. For an instant, the room was perfectly silent and perfectly still. The ghoul chauffeur still sat in the driver's seat, only his head wobbled loosely, leaning at a right angle to the rest of his neck.
Ha! I cackled, wheezing. Ha! Ha! Moron.
A large figure leapt up to the hole in the exterior wall and landed in the room across the hall, hitting with a crunch only slightly less massive than the car had made. I swear to you, if I'd heard that sound effect they used to use when Steve Austin jumped somewhere, I would not have been shocked. The other room was unlit, and the newcomer was a massive, threatening shadow. He slapped a hand the size of a big cookie tray on the floor and let out a low, rumbling sound like nothing I'd ever heard this side of an amplified bass guitar. It was music. You couldn't have written it in musical notation any more than you could write the music of a thunderstorm or write lyrics to the song of a running stream, but it was music nonetheless. Power, like nothing I had ever encountered, surged out from that impact, a deep, shuddering wave that passed visibly through the dust in the air. The ceiling and the walls and the floor sang in resonance with the note and impact alike, and Barrowill's psychic assault was swept away like a sandcastle before the tide. Connie's eyes flooded with color, changing from pure, empty whiteness back to a rich blue as deep and rich as a glacial lake, and the humanity came flooding back into her features. A sense of wild panic in the air suddenly vanished, and for another timeless instant, everything in that night went utterly silent and still. Holy crap. I've worked with magic for decades, and take it from me, it really isn't very different from anything else in life. When you work with magic, you rapidly realize that it is far easier to disrupt than to create. Far more difficult to mend than to destroy. Throw a stone into a glass smooth lake and ripples will wash over the whole thing. Making waves with magic instead of a rock would have been easy. But if you make that lake smooth again, that's one hell of a trick. That surge of energy didn't attack anything or anybody. It didn't destroy Barrowill's assault. It made the water smooth again. Strength of a river in his shoulders opened his eyes, and his fury made them burn like coals in the shadows. But he simply crouched, doing nothing. All of Barrowill's goons remained still, wide eyes flicking from River to Barrowill and back.
"Back off, Chuck," I said. "He's giving you a chance to walk away. Take him up on it."
The vampire's expression was completely blank as he stood among the debris. He stared at River's shoulders for maybe 3 seconds, and then I saw movement behind River's shoulders. Clawed hands began to grip the edges of the hole behind River. Wicked, bulging red eyes appeared. Monstrous-looking things in the same general shape as a human appeared in complete silence. Ghouls. Barrowill didn't have 6 goons with him. He'd brought them all. Barrowill spat toward River, bared his teeth, and screamed,
"Kill it!"
And it was on. Everything went completely insane. The human-shaped ghouls in the room bounded forward, their faces and limbs contorting, tearing their way out of their cheap suits as they assumed their true forms. More ghouls poured in through the hole in the wall like a swarm of panicked roaches. I couldn't get an accurate count of the enemy. The action was too fast. But 20 sounded about right. 20 flesh-rending, superhumanly strong and durable predators flung themselves onto River's shoulders in an overwhelming wave. He vanished beneath a couple of tons of hungry ghoul. It was not a fair fight. Barrowill should have brought more goons. There was an enormous bellow, a sound that could only have been made by a truly massive set of lungs, and ghouls exploded outward from River's shoulders, like so much hideous shrapnel. Several were flung back out of the building. Others slammed into walls with so much force that they shattered the drywall. One of them went through the ceiling, then fell limply back down into the room, only to be caught by the neck in one of River's shoulders' massive hands. He squeezed, crushing the ghoul's neck like soft clay, and there was an audible pop. The ghoul spasmed once, then River flung the corpse into the nearest batch of monsters. After that, it was clobbering time. Barrowill moved fast, seizing Connie and darting out the door. I looked around frantically and spotted one of the knives the goons had been holding before they transformed. My hands and ankles had been bound in those plastic restraining strips, and I could barely feel my fingers, but I managed to pick up the knife and cut my legs free. Then I put it on the front bumper of the Lincoln, stepped on it with 1 foot to hold it in place, and after a few moments managed to cut my hands loose as well. The dorm sounded like a medley of pay-per-view wrestling and the Island of Dr. Moreau. Ghouls shrieked. River's shoulders roared. Very, very disoriented students screamed. The walls and floor shook with impact again and again as River's shoulders flung ghouls around like so many softballs. Ghoulish blood spattered the walls and the ceiling, green, brown, and putrid smelling. And as strong as he was, River's shoulders wasn't pitching a shutout. The ghoul's claws and fangs had sunk into him, covering him in punctures and lacerations, and his scarlet blood mixed with theirs on the various surfaces.